This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Okay, we are at the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and get us started. So welcome to our folks who have joined us via Zoom. You're on the screen here in Crail C, along with our presenter, Dr. Larry Pierce. And then we have folks here live in the Crail C room. So we continue our series today with looking at the three R's, you know, rest, recreation, and reflection. And we've been doing a little like a variation on those themes. And so today we have Reverend Dr. Larry Pierce, who will be with us to talk about sacred pauses and kind of help us understand that rhythm that's really a part of our Christian tradition that comes out of the monastic tradition. And so Larry's going to talk to us about it in some very concrete and contemporary ways. So Larry is, he partners with religious organizations and leaders across many faith traditions to help them lead from a sense of purpose and innovate by aligning strategy and spirit. So he's a great coach individually and also with congregations. He's an adjunct professor at Lancaster Theological Seminary and at Hartford Seminary's new master's program in peacemaking. He leads planning events with congregations, staff team coaching, clergy coaching, and retreats. And he's a member of the Congregational Consulting Group. And he's a former consultant with the Alban Institute and the former director of the Pastoral Excellence Network. And I've known Larry for a number of years, and it's been my honor to work with him on two different grants that that I received when in the former work that I did before coming to St. David's. And I worked with Larry to design a clergy well-being program and a clergy mentoring program. So it's great to see Larry and to hear him again. So Larry, I'm going to turn things over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Mona. And good to be with you all this morning. As Mona said, my topic is sacred pause and sacred pauses. And so I want to begin this way by saying that there was a New York Times opinion piece some months ago written by Sinda Aga, and she wrote about her first year of the pandemic, and perhaps you can identify with her experience. This is what she wrote. For the past 12 months, I've overworked myself to avoid any pauses in the day where feelings might creep in, because how can I make sense of this year, she says. If I try to pause, I'm pretty sure my mind might short circuit, that smoke will spill out of my ears and the room will smell of burning plastic. I identify a little bit with that tendency of responding to the pandemic at first with what I call my ever ready self, my energizer bunny self. And I found myself just keeping busy and doing a lot of things until I had to also remind myself that pausing and taking an opportunity to pause is both a practical and a spiritual necessity. So we all have our own relationships to pauses. Sometimes we might avoid them, as Aga did, for fear of what could happen if we stopped ourselves in our tracks, apparently. And sometimes we welcome pauses. And sometimes, let's just face it, pauses find us as well. One of the seminaries where I teach, Hartford Seminary, is an interfaith seminary that has a long tradition of including Muslim, Jewish, and Christian students and students from other traditions in classes together. And this experience has led me to really appreciate interreligious spirituality. And what I mean by that is finding resonant themes within and across religious faiths that can help us understand and connect with one another across the differences of our various faith traditions. And one of those resonant themes across traditions is sacred pauses. Because it's a universal human need, I think, to pause, because becoming human religiously requires taking reflective and restorative pauses, we need many reminders to take a pause and to take sacred pauses. So in many religious traditions, there are specific periods of time to take a sacred pause. When we step out of our routines and are able to attend to our own processes of becoming, like Lent or Ramadan or the High Holy Days. Those are times when there is an intentionality around deliberately creating an inner and collective space and time for reflection, for reconnection to the sources of spiritual renewal, and even times for reconciliation with others. So today, as we look at these sacred pauses, first, I'm going to review those scheduled periods of time that and make some connection with this tradition. But also, I want to have us recognize that taking pauses allows us to live what I would call a spiritually infused life, an everyday life that allows for spirituality not to be a vacation from reality, but a way to connect more deeply with our real experiences. And then I'll remind us of daily practices, and then I'll reflect with you on sacred pauses that can also happen in unplanned ways, but can be absolutely necessary for us. So let me first ask you this. If you came to a crossroads and the signs read this way to life and this way to God, which way would you choose? How many generations of honest people have been bewildered by this apparent dilemma, what seems like a dilemma, believing that the way to God lies in the opposite direction from a human life? How many people's psycho-spiritual health has actually been undermined because they took the road away from life and away from their own humanity with some thought that that somehow made them more spiritual? This quote is from one of my, this question comes from one of my favorite contemporary Sufi writers, Kabir Helminski. And what I really appreciate by the insight in his question is the recognition that spirituality is, from my understanding, to be infused within life itself. That the spiritual is not a separate dimension of life where we take, as I said earlier, occasional vacations every now and then from life. Instead, we know that life isn't, really isn't this either or kind of dilemma. That might appear on the kind of signs that were in that quote, where God's this way and life's this way. Within our actual experiences, there are not often these clear directional signs, but sometimes, an intentional, planned or unplanned stop sign might appear. And in those times, we either move to taking a pause, or a pause finds us. And in those pauses, what I'm calling today sacred pauses, I believe that life and God can be found simultaneously. We often do fall for these ways of conceptualizing our experiences, as apparent dilemmas or polarities, like God this way, life this way. We're often influenced by a Western culture that imagines that we have to choose between mind or heart, reason or intuition, between accomplishment or meaning. But this is such a lopsided approach to life, I believe. We imagine that we and all that is divided into these concepts, these conceptualizations that we've imposed upon life itself, that in reality, these distinctions do not exist. Although some in our culture and our rational approaches to religion often pressure us to make a choice, let's think about it. It's not an either or. There really can't be a choice between mind and heart, between reason and intuition. Somehow they're intricately connected one way or another. So I found this phrase from Paolo Ferrucci, the Italian psychotherapist, recently, that I think helps to bridge this understanding around the either or and helps us understand how these domains are actually connected. And his phrase is as well as. So let's try that on for a moment. Rather than say mind or heart, we could say, I am attending to my mind as well as my heart. Do you see how that brings us home to our actual experiences? How that unites us rather than divides us? Give me like a thumbs up or something to give me some sense that you're listening or resonating with what I'm saying. Thank you. That helps. That helps an extrovert to get some kind of response. Okay, so think about it. We could try to say, I'm attending to my reason as well as my intuition. I am committed to my accomplishments as well as the meaning that my accomplishments give to me and to life. So I want to point out, this is not just semantics. It's not just a play on words. I feel it's actually very essential for us to claim what I'm calling the whole enchilada of our human experience. I thought I'd use enchilada since I'm speaking to this group in Texas this morning. We can't pretend to dissect what actually is not dissected, that we would ever be either or heart or mind, or either or reason or intuition, either attend to God or to life, is a kind of a false dichotomy that often arises in our understanding of life and the spiritual life. I'll say it again. All that is intricately connected in ways that our useful conceptualizations of our experiences don't always convey. I'll let E.M. Forster say it better. In his book, Howard Ends, he says, Howard's End, he says this very directly as the narrator, only connect. That was the whole of her sermon. Only connect the prose and the passion, and both will be exalted, and human love will be seen at its height. Live in the fragments no longer. Live in the fragments no longer. So to take sacred pauses, I believe, allow us to remember to only connect. That is, for me, which underlies many of the spiritual religious practices and rituals of pausing. Whether we remind ourselves through prayer or meditation or through silence, whether we remind ourselves through Holy Communion or praying the hours, underlying it all, in my opinion, is this invitation into this deeper realization of the divine that is within life, not apart from it. This deeper sensitivity that it is within life that Jesus incarnates or embodies God. And so it is an aspiration for all of us as well to continually incarnate, to make space for God in the everyday, to let the divine emanate in, but also through us, requires us to take sacred pauses. Furthermore, given the fragile wounds of our earth, given the tragic disease and legacy of racism, we can only respond as whole selves, not with parts of ourselves, not with fragments of ourselves. To respond to these social and ecological and personal challenges, we need to think as well as to feel. We need to reason as well as to imagine our way forward. We must, as Forrester admonishes us, to live in the fragments no more. This fragmented understanding of who we are as human beings, who we are as human beings in relationship to the earth, is one that that eludes us or deludes us from understanding the real connection of what it means to live a spiritually infused life. For me, it's a religious task to have this understanding of connecting, deeply connecting, being in deep relationship to life itself, as well as to God simultaneously. That for me is an important message of what I'm wanting to communicate today through this reflection on pausing. I'll put it this way, a spiritually infused life where we show up with our Sunday go to meeting clothes every darn moment of the day is what I think this is about. Not just at special times or moments. And to recognize that in order to do that, we have to live our days and be in our days in such a way that we can pause, we can reflect, we can connect, we can attend to the wonders that are always around us and within us. And in the midst of that, discover that all of life has within it the possibility of sacrament, the possibility of deeper connection to the holy. Now, I've been drawn to this Sufi understanding of a unitive consciousness or an integral way of being in the world for a long time. Not that I actually can sustain that awareness, you know, for long periods of time. I know when I've drifted, however, as an undergraduate student in psychology, now we're talking about like the Stone Ages, okay? Like when I was in college, it's like long, long, long time ago. It's even remarkable that I can even remember back that far. I was fascinated by Robert Ornstein's book, The Psychology of Consciousness. And I got to hear him lecture. And in the book, he often told Sufi tales. And so that was kind of what first drew me to the appreciation of these tales. I learned later that this Stanford University psychologist actually had met and studied with a Sufi teacher, Indrias Shah, in the 1960s. And they collaborated together in the areas of consciousness, human knowledge, and so forth. And Ornstein found in these stories teaching examples of how the linear, the rational, and the nonlinear, the intuitive, functions in the brain are actually connected, not disconnected. I think we could look at Jesus's parables in the same way as we might look at some of these Sufi tales, because the parables of Jesus serve us in a similar way. They sometimes disorient us from our expectations of what should happen in the story, in the parable. And then we're invited into a new way of thinking about things and a new way of being in the world. And Jesus called this new way of thinking, this new way of being, the kingdom of God, and what some of us call today the reign of God. It's much a way of consciousness and a way of being in relationship to one another and to the world as anything else. When Jesus says the kingdom of God is at hand, he's inviting us to appreciate what we sometimes can only appreciate when we pause, when we sit back, when we reflect, and we connect deeply through ritual, prayer, meditation, praying the hours, or just a simple time of sitting still. So I want to invite us into some various ways of thinking about the practices that exist for us as we move into these pauses, so that we don't have to be fearful about pausing, as the New York Times opinion author was during the pandemic. And we can begin to come into our own relationship with pause. And pauses, and sacred pauses. I have to make a confession. I am an overachiever person. And so I'm speaking as much to myself as I am to you this morning. I have to keep reminding myself that I am more than what I accomplish. I have to keep reminding myself that it's not just doing and accomplishing where the full quality of life is experienced, that sometimes just being and appreciating the pauses that want to happen, that can happen, also allow me to round out my own experience of myself, the world, and of God as well. So one practice is often one that spiritual directors use. They use questions that invite us into sensing our life as a whole and not in fragments, or sensing our relationship with God and within life at the same time. So as I pose these questions, I want you to kind of listen to your own response as it is forming in yourself. Don't go immediately to just words, unless that is what immediately occurs to you, but try to allow yourself to also sense your response to the question. How are you sensing it in your body? What are you noticing, even in subtle ways? Notice your response in terms of what you might be feeling or what images arise, as well as what words, so that you allow the questions itself, the question themselves, to invite you into this more undivided, connected way of being. So let me offer you the first question, and I'm going to pause a little bit afterwards so that you have just a little time to attend to your own response. The first question is, what makes your heart sing? What makes your heart sing? Let's take a sacred pause and reflect on that question. So in the course of this talk, I might be moving through things a little too quickly, but maybe you might find time to linger with any one of these questions that I'm offering a little later today or later this week. The other is, how is it with your soul? How is it with your soul? And notice, you can't respond to that question just by words. You have to attend to your own heart, as well as your mind. You have to attend to your own sensations and your own feelings as well. So how is it with your soul? And the third question, and again, I know I'm moving through these too quickly, but I want to offer them to you in ways that might resonate beyond just this talk. And the third one is, where is God now in my own life? How is God working within and through my own life right now? Some shorten that question to say, where is God in this? So let's pause there for a moment too. So such questions can only fully be answered from the place where the heart and the mind intersect, where reason and intuition can also be heard. And Sufi stories, just like the parables of Jesus, invite us into these insightful places, sometimes in delightful ways. Take this story by the 13th century storyteller Rumi, probably the best known Sufi storyteller, Sufi teacher in America. Rumi told this story. A grammar teacher fell in the well and was screaming for help. A dervish came along and he said, "I'll get you out. I seen a ladder up at the mosque." The grammarian remember, who was in the well said, "Young man, your verb tense is incorrect." The dervish said, "If that's what you think is important in this situation, you'd better stay in the well until I learn to speak correctly." So, and then he went down the road, leaving the grammarian in the well. Such a funny, I think, but yet insightful story that discloses to us how often and easy it is for us to be like that grammarian in the story. We can really lose sight of the big picture of what's important. And in this case, the grammarian couldn't get outside of his own way, outside of his own role, to see that his life actually depended upon it. Does this sound familiar to any of you? This sense of like not being able to see the world more differently or more outside of your own role to see what really needs to be responded to. Rumi has a wonderful line in his poem, "The Great Wagon," that, and I'll just read one verse from it. "People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep." Maybe that line in and of itself can be an essential wisdom that can resound in any of us this morning and be a way to remind us of some of the purposes of our religious traditions. I believe this "don't go back to sleep" is reinforced by many of our religious practices and rituals that in effect tap us on the shoulder out of the slumber that we might be in any particular moment. They remind us to awaken to wonder and to mystery. They remind us to pause and attend to the whispers of the spirit within us and all around us. We need these kind of wake-up calls for sure, since our hearts can oftentimes get hardened or embittered. We need to find sacred pauses now and then, if just to awaken ourselves or to see or sense the bigger picture of what is really going on. Sometimes we're trapped in our own wells and we need to allow ourselves to be released and to pause and to let go of those roles or ways of thinking that in a sense invite us into slumber instead of wakefulness. The moment that we're in right now, let's face it, this pandemic, this post-pandemic time, whatever it is, let's try to figure that out soon, requires of us a wakefulness like never before in our lifetimes. We need not just to be alert, but also to be awakened to our interconnections with one another. We have been awakened during this time to the astronomical, ever-widening gap between the rich and the poor, the disparities in healthcare and the vital social caring networks. We've been awakened to all of those disparities and differences and inequities in our society. And these inequities, when we're aware of them, we also recognize can mean life for some and death for others. And that's a rude awakening that we're in right now in this social moment that calls us to respond to the gospel, I think, in some new ways, if we dare to pause and take it in and to be awake. So planned sacred pauses, I think, occur in many different traditions. Our Muslim neighbors around the world take a sacred pause of sorts during the month of Ramadan. This is as much a time for spiritual deepening as it is for renewing connections with others. It is a period to deepen one's relationship with God, as well as seek forgiveness and reconciliation. After the daily fast, families come together to break a fast. And in recent years, in my experience, this has also become a time for Muslims to gather with their interfaith neighbors and friends as well to celebrate the breaking of the fast. In Judaism, of course, there are also those planned periods of times that provide sacred pauses. Some are periods of times in which Jews set aside weeks or days for inner reflection and renewal. One of those is the practice of counting the Omer, the days between the second day of Passover and the day before the holiday of Shavuot. During this counting of the Omer, there's this practice, a pausing practice at the end of the day, where each Jew who takes on this practice might pause. And I think it's a kind of a practice that can serve any one of us, whatever our religious tradition, at any time in any season of the year. So before going to sleep, the practice is to review your day. See where you succeeded, where you achieved, where you produced, where you laughed, where you shared, where you gave, and where you received. To see where you could have done better, been nicer, been kinder, who you may have hurt, and who hurt you, to ask for forgiveness or offer forgiveness. And then with that pause having taken, it's a way of living one's life deliberately, to kind of awaken to the new day because of that nightly pause and figure out what you might do differently in the days that lie before you. I think indeed that can be a wonderful practice for any one of us if living our lives religiously is our intention. I think it's obviously these holy days become like mirrors for us. They allow us to see ourselves in a new light as we journey through the year. For Christians, of course, there's the period of Lent, which is a pause of sorts for 40 days. This becomes a time that traditionally has included fasting and self-reflection and attending to the reconciliation of one's life to God and to others. So I think it's a good idea to have these planned, these unexpected planned and expected pauses, I should say, built into a religious tradition, because they can be shared experiences and not just individual ones. There can be like a tacit recognition that as a religious community, we are all calling a halt to business as usual for a period of time, so that at least some sliver of our attention turns inward towards ourselves, towards our soul, towards God, and that attention can emanate outward towards others in compassion, in love, and in forgiveness. So there are also, in addition to these planned periods of pause, there are, of course, the daily pauses that exist in religious traditions. Once when I was teaching a group of modern Orthodox rabbis, I had to work into my actual teaching schedule, had to work around their daily prayer schedule, since they pray three times a day. So at pre-scheduled times, the rabbis would scatter around the room or the grounds of the conference center where we were meeting with their siddur, with their prayer book, and they would pray individually. And then following the prayer, they'd come back to the room and we would continue our training. Everything else would stop during these sacred pauses. And maybe you've had this kind of experience too of daily pauses if you've ever attended retreats in Christian monasteries or where there have been those sacred pauses, but in the Christian tradition have been called praying the hours that occur during the day. Bakrina Baedeker, a contemporary author, has written a book entitled Seven Sacred Pauses, Living Mindfully Through the Hours of the Day. And I recommend that book. It's a short book, but I think it's poignant in terms of helping us see the importance psychologically and spiritually and socially for developing the practice of sacred pauses. She finds a kind of a contemporary and enduring meaning for this ancient practice of praying the hours. She says, of course, it's not just for monks, but for all of us. She offers these verses early on in her book, which I'll read. Reverence each hour as a small stepping stone on your pilgrimage through the day. Receive the gift of seven sacred pauses. Practice waking up seven times a day. I know that I could use that kind of practice. I know that it probably could serve many of us to take practice on our own schedule. It might not be seven. You might get one in a day. You might get in three. But to practice waking up, to practice pausing, can be, I think, such a great way to cultivate our soul. For most of us, the idea of pausing for just a few times a day to practice waking up, to take sacred pauses as a routine, might be a real stretch. How many of you feel like that might be a stretch for you? Anybody? Okay, well, maybe. Okay, good. You got it. So most of us are trained to move from one activity to another. I have to practice like not sitting on the edge of my chair, like ready to jump and do the next thing once I finished an activity. And so I've had to practice like sitting back and like savoring my experience. I think of the poet, I'm not remembering who it was now, who said, and I'll paraphrase, every day I get up, I have to ponder whether I'm going to save the world or savor the world. Save the world or savor it. And I think pausing is a little bit, about savoring, perhaps with the intention to also offer some saving presence, but one without the other is often a lopsided way. I'm intrigued by Weitker's concept of each day being a pilgrimage. Indeed, isn't there something to discover within each day? Indeed, there is a way that our days can take a sacred path. However, when there's no monastery bell ringing to remind us, when there's no community around us that also pauses alongside of us, this is a practice that's oftentimes hard to incorporate into our life. Some have found that it becomes a little more easy, a little more practical if they allow themselves to pause between each activity. That was actually a practice in early monasteries. People would pause as they moved from work to prayer or from prayer to a meal. Just pause a little bit or pause at the threshold of a door just for a moment to do as what they called, let the Spirit of God into their hearts in those moments, intentionally and periodically during the day. Those who practice Buddhism have often found that taking these pauses routinely through the day allows them to carry their mindful approach off the cushion and into daily life, where it might actually do some good for themselves, their relationships with others. And then the third category that I want to hold up is those unexpected but necessary pauses in our everyday life. So even if a scheduled period of days for sacred pauses are not something you feel or need are part of your practice, even though like a period of Lent or whatever might be not be something that you can engage in wholeheartedly or intentionally, even if sacred pauses during the day as you move through your day do not feel like there's something you can sustain, there are other opportunities that come our way for a pause, a sacred pause. Sometimes they come at inopportune, unexpected, and sometimes unwelcome ways. Sometimes they elude us, sometimes we avoid them, yet there are always these opportunities to call a halt to what's going on in order to reset, to reconnect, and to renew. These necessary pauses that arise when we're actually able to enter them can often influence who we will become. One of the best teachers around this, I think, is the Buddhist teacher, Pema Chodron. She's been an excellent presenter on this phenomenon of being activated or triggered by events in our life. And then she says to use those times when we find ourselves heating up, when we find ourselves getting agitated or angry, to use those as a time to recalibrate in the moment. She uses a Buddhist term. These highly activated times or triggers, they're called kleshas or shempas, but a translation of shempa might be hooked. And we all know what it feels like to get hooked, what it feels like to get stuck. You know, usually we get hooked in an interaction with someone, we're reacting or overreacting to what's happened long before we realize it. And so that's a time to take a pause. Anyone else ever get hooked by someone, like find yourself getting angry, agitated, or irritated? Let me not feel like the only one here. Can I just see, like, maybe even just a finger raising so I get some sense of it? Okay, good. All right. So it's those moments that Chodron reminds us can be really teachable moments for us that show up in everyday life. Sometimes someone says a harsh word and something in you tightens. You're instantly hooked. That tightness quickly spirals into blaming the person or denigrating yourself. The chain reaction of speaking or acting or obsessing then starts to occur, and it often happens very fast, long before we're even aware of it. And the fundamental and the most basic understanding here is that we can train ourselves to deal with those moments more intentionally by taking pauses. Now, there is some kind of what Chodron calls bourgeois suffering, like being caught in a traffic jam. And we find ourselves getting really activated and agitated by that. Or we ask for an aisle seat and they give us a middle seat. And she says, like, train on these events where we get irritated. Allow them to recognize how easily we can get activated. And she says that taking a pause during this time means like taking a breath and notice what's heating up in your body. Notice the thoughts that are running through your mind. She says, one of the biggest things to imagine is that we often attach a story to what's happening. We have a story about why that person said what it is that they said, or why we weren't able to respond, or whatever it might be. We have a storyline, and Chodron really says it's important for us to recognize that our own story can heat up. Story about what's going on can heat up the situation. So she advises us in those sacred pauses to take a breath and to drop the story. Drop, no matter how attached we might be to our understanding of who's wrong and who's right, no matter how right and justified we might be for being angry in those moments, she says, practice sometimes, and I wouldn't say always, practice sometimes dropping the story and seeing what shifts in you. So as I'm moving towards concluding here and allowing ourselves to have a little time for some interaction, the author that I began with, Singha Aga, in the New York Times opinion piece, she was afraid of pauses. And then she discovered that if she spent time with poems and reading poems, she oftentimes found that those poems allowed her to take a pause. So it's like a tool. It was a way for her to enter a poem. She says, a poem is a timeless place, an immaterial plot of land where we can gather across generations to breathe and to feel deeply and safely. And I've participated in a process called Poetry as Medicine. And actually, my teachers were from Austin. because we did it as an online course and really enjoyed being with them. So I wouldn't call myself a poet necessarily, but I do appreciate the way that reading a poem, listening and hearing poems alone or with others can often take us to those timeless places. So for me, also the practice of gratitude, to pause periodically during the day and to ask myself, what am I grateful for? And to allow the actual feeling of gratitude, not the thought of gratitude, but the sense of gratitude in my heart to be cultivated, is a wonderful sacred pause, because something transmutes in me, something shifts in me when I'm allowed to recognize, gosh, in spite of everything else that might be going on, there are still these shivering, shimmering moments of gratitude that I have that I can savor just a little bit. And those are sacred pauses that sometimes allow me to re-enter life in a different way, less agitated, less critical, just appreciating all that is and all that I have received. So in summary, but take a deliberate time to periodically pause with questions like, how are things with my soul today? Where is God in this experience? Develop a practice of pausing periodically during the day in whatever way that might happen, whether it's praying the hours or whether it's pausing as you move from one activity to another. Savor seasons of pausing that happen within the church year. It could be Lent or Advent, and utilize these times. Go into those periods and allow yourself to renew your relationship with God, reconcile others with others in your life. And when you find yourself activated by someone and you're revving up emotionally, observe yourself in those moments. Those are the necessary pauses. Breathe into those moments. Recognize your sensations in your body. Notice the thoughts that are coming. Allow yourself to find a way to relax in the breathing. And then, as best you can, drop the story of blaming and shaming or the demeaning yourself that might accompany those moments, and take a pause. Take a pause with the third thing, a poem. Maybe that would help. And also centering prayer, I think, is often a wonderful practice for us as we take a moment to relax, take a sacred word. It could be God. It could be holiness. It could be peace. It could be love. It could be reverence, whatever the word might be. And allow yourself to repeat it gently and steadily as an inner commitment to be in the presence or the quality of that word. And as thoughts arise, resist no thought, retain no thought, react to no thought, return to the sacred word. So don't worry about fighting the thoughts. Don't worry about holding on or reacting to them. Just keep returning to the sacred word. And over time, I often find that you're able to drop into the quality of the word that you're focusing on, whether it be holiness, whether it be God, whether it be oneness, love, and allow yourself to be in the presence in whatever way this occurs for you, returning to your sacred word as you need to. So Tara Brach, the Buddhist teacher, says that the sacred pause helps us to reconnect with the present moment. I would say the sacred pause also helps us to reconnect with God, especially when we are caught up in striving and obsessing and leaning into the future. Pausing enables us to re-enter the mystery and the vitality only found in the here and now, she concludes. So I would add, pausing allows us to connect with God, and maybe even allow God to find us. Pausing allows us to begin the process of emanating the spiritual qualities of compassion and love outward from ourselves. So it's not just a personal, individual experience. It's an experience that allows us to radiate that which is most important, most healing, and most liberating for the world. So let me pause there. I'm open to any comments or things you would like to add to what I said. If you have a question, you can do that. Let's have a little time to be with each other and whatever got stirred in you through what I've offered this morning. And Mona, I'm not sure how that happens. Do you use the raise hand feature or the chat?
Yeah, folks who are on Zoom can unmute themselves and ask their question. And then if we've got anybody here in the room, they can either speak it out and I'll repeat it, or you can come to the microphone, whichever.
Okay, good. All righty, great. So what got stirred in you? What would you add to what I said? Any question you might have of each other or myself? Did you find something useful or helpful in what I said? Edith, go ahead.
You know I'll always say something.
Okay. I didn't know that, Edith, but thanks for the surprise.
The dropping the story.
Yeah.
That's so hard. I have a couple of stories I've been working on.
Yeah.
And I'd never thought, I think I do try to pause when I'm in the heat of the moment, unless I'm in the car driving and the other person can't hear me and then I don't care where I pause or not. But I do try to pause when I find the temperature rising.
Yeah.
And I have been working on the drop the story, and I guess to have, you know, another credentialed person say drop the story, it's like, oh. Mm-hmm. But it's such a good story, and it's so right. You know, it's almost comforting, and so that one's one that for sure it was helpful to hear that.
Yeah, and,
I'm hoping this is being recorded because I think I need to hear a lot more of it back.
Yeah.
That was the biggest aha moment.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Edith. And can I add just one suggestion to that? Maybe dropping the story is really hard at first. Maybe the very first step is to ask yourself, what's the story that I'm holding on to first? And just be aware of the story. And then over time, maybe you can let it drop. Okay, just...
I think that has been working for me. I think the first time I ever thought about or was presented with that idea of dropping the story, it was like, what? And then I think what I'm aiming for is joy.
Yeah.
And that story brings me no joy. And so slowly but surely, I am more able to drop that story.
Great. I loved when you said what I'm aiming for is joy, because I had a twinkle of what that joy looked like just by watching you in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was there.
Boy's okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else have anything to add or to say or question?
I was really struck by the concept of trying to find the sacrament in moments throughout the day. Mm-hmm. In terms of that concept of just sort of pausing and trying to find those very sort of sacred moments.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And Judy, if I could stay with you for just a half second longer, how do you think that might best work for you? What might you do to kind of remind yourself about that? Is there anything that would be a good practice that you already do or you could recommend to others?
I've recently been using, I found this wellness journal on Amazon that, sort of guides you for each day through, spending time thinking, you know, what many of us have been doing, I think, in terms of finding moments of gratitude and having a positive thought, but there's a section of the journal that, asks you to look at sort of for this day, right? Did you get enough nutrients? Did you get enough sleep? Did you get enough sunlight and joy and fun? And it's been really interesting to me to sort of take that moment at the end of the day, and especially the joy and fun part. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but just to sort of giving myself permission of, hey, did I have some fun today? Right.
Yeah. Besides
just going to work and doing the things that I need to do. Was there a moment in time? So that kind of has, I think, helped me to be a little bit more mindful of those special moments.
Wonderful. Thank you, Judy. That's very helpful. Thank you. Anyone else?
This is Catherine. I really appreciate your comments about not being able to dissect what cannot be dissected, that there is truly no distinction between, or we create distinctions where distinctions don't exist.
Yeah.
The heart and the mind, between our reason and our intuition. And I really liked hearing about our accomplishments and our purpose or our meaning.
Yeah.
They don't have to be, they're not different.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Catherine. And I think it's like the intersecting between heart and mind, the intersection between reason and intuition or meaning and accomplishment is what we're wanting to experience and get beyond, as you're saying, the dissecting of those and seeing them as dichotomies. How does heart inform mind and mind inform heart? You know? And physiologically, we know there are many neural pathways from the heart or nerves. Neural pathways from the heart as there are to the head, as there are from the head to the heart. So there is that real connection between the two if we can open ourselves to our heart intelligence as well. Thank you, Catherine. Anyone else or anything you'd like to add to what I've said? Any questions?
It's not a question, Larry, but I'll just say one of the things I always appreciate about your presentations is the way that you you give us some tools. And one of my takeaways from today is going to be, and it kind of piggybacks on what Catherine was saying about the dichotomies, is to use that phrase as well as, so that's going to kind of be the takeaway for me, that to just the heart as well as, the mind. Mm-hmm. So,
yes, right. Yeah. Good. Okay, so is this anything else, or is this a concluding time? I'll let you decide, Mona. Barbara, did you want to say something? You just came on the screen. Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Indeed, I'm glad you mentioned the work of Pema Chodron.
Yeah.
I'd like to recommend it to people who are unaware of her, about the size of a playing card, Awakening Loving Kindness. Full with gentle words and her wisdom. It's lovely. Mm. Thank you for mentioning her.
Yeah, thank you. That's a nice benediction for our time together, Barbara. Thank you for that.
It is. And thank you again, Larry, for your wisdom and for your time. And thanks, everyone, for being a part of this lecture this morning. So,
great. I appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.